John 6, from verses 1 to 21, give us a basis for the Lord's teaching on the bread of life. As we follow through the Gospel of John, we'll find there are seven I am statements. I am the bread of life, I am the light of the world, I am the resurrection and the life, and we'll find that each I am statement is in a discourse after a miracle, that there are seven miracles. And it's amazing as we follow through how structured John is. There are seven times when his disciples don't know exactly what he's talking about in his questions. There are seven times when it says, after these things. Anytime through the gospel and somebody says, guess how many times it says this, you know, before they ask, it says it seven times. So this foundation now that he builds the bread of life discourse on, I feel is real important. So let's move through it and see what the Lord has to say to us. This is the only miracle now that is recorded in all four gospels besides the resurrection. The feeding of the 5,000, the Holy Spirit felt was important enough to include in all four Gospels. It says, after these things, Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, which is in the Sea of Tiberias, and a great multitude followed him because they saw his miracles, which he did on them that were diseased. Now, the picture is they're continually following him. Now, we know there's 5,000 men, women, and children, probably a crowd of about 10,000 at this point in time, continually following Jesus through the hills and dales. And the other Gospels tell us that he goes there to get alone. In fact, he takes his disciples, I think Mark says, away for a rest, to get away somewhere quiet. And, of course, they get there and probably think, phew, you know, we're finally going to get a break and turn around. Here comes 10,000 people marching up the hill. So Jesus goes up into a mountain, it says, and there he sat with his disciples, and the Passover feast, the time of the Jews, was near. So this is springtime. John's cueing us in when it was. And Jesus then lifted up his eyes and saw a great company come unto him. And he says unto Philip, when shall we buy bread that these may eat? And this he said to prove him, Philip, for Jesus knew himself what he would do. He knew what he was going to do. But Philip answered him and said, 200 penny worth or denarii of bread are not sufficient for them, that every one of them may even take a little. And one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said unto him, there's a lad here that has five barley loaves and two small fishes, but what are they among so many? So we begin to get the account now. The other Gospels tell us, and John strangely omits it, that Jesus saw the multitudes and had compassion on him. Matthew tells this story from one perspective of the Messiah. Mark tells it from a perspective of a servant, of course. Luke tells it a perspective of Christ meeting the needs of humanity. But John is portraying the Son of God. He's portraying someone else for us as he tells this account. Now, it says that he puts Philip here on the spot and asks him a question. Now, he says Jesus already knew what he was going to do. And we have to remember that's the way it is in our life. Sometimes he'll put us in a situation, it seems like there's 10,000 hungry people, and he leaves it up to us to feed them. You know, he puts us in the middle of a little bit of insanity to see how we're going to react. But take heart, because he already knows what he's going to do. Not that that does you a lot of good at the time, because you don't know what he's going to do. But he knows what he's going to do. So we find Philip and Andrew here, much like us, looking at the circumstances, preoccupied with the circumstances. Philip says even 200 days' wages wouldn't even be enough to buy enough so that everybody could just have a little taste. And Andrew says, well, we got these five barley loaves and two fishes, but what in the world good are they going to do? He gets them from a lad, it says. Now, some Bible expositors go to the extreme to tell us that this little lad here pulled out his barley loaves and his fishes to share, and that it was customary in that day for the Jews to carry their lunch in their sleeves. They had these big baggy sleeves, and that everybody had their lunch with them, and they were kind of selfish. But when they saw the generosity of this little boy, that they all got convicted and untied their sleeves, and that's where all the food came from, of course. That's a silly story. But what happened the truth of what happened is this little guy got ready to run out of the house in the morning, and there's a big crowd going over towards the hills on the west side of the Sea of Galilee there. And his mom said, you know, Billy, get back here. Where are you going? You know, you got Kool-Aid around your mouth and your hair needs to get combed. And you didn't take anything to eat, you know, and here's 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And, you know, what do you... And not, of course, not knowing that what was going to take place with the lunch she packed for him. And just like a mom sends him out of the house with it. And, you know, little Billy, whoever he was, says, well, here, you know, everybody's hungry. I got this. And then it says, Jesus makes them sit down. There was much grass in the place, so the men sat down. Numbers at springtime. And Mark, interestingly enough, tells us that the grass was green, like we might suspect another color. But I think that he had on his mind the 23rd Psalm where the Lord says, he maketh me, not asks me to, because we won't if he asks us, not encourages me to, because we won't if he encourages us, but he makes us lie down in green pastures. When things start to get out of control and we're in a situation like this, you know how calm you always remain. And when everything's blowing apart, how you just kind of settle down and seek the Lord. That's not at all what happens. When I get in a circumstance like this, the Lord finally gets on my shoulders, you know, down, 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 and boom, you know, he makes me sit down. And so he can finally get my attention. My tendency, of course, is to run around, try to figure out what to do, handle everything myself, jump out the window, and, you know, when everything else has failed, I'm ready to push a button and set off a nuclear bomb, you know, Lord, help me. But he gets these people and he makes them. He's going to minister something to them. He makes them sit down. The other Gospels tell us in 50s and 100s. He's orderly about it. There's probably about 10,000, 5,000 men, women, children. And you know how hard it would be to be orderly with a few thousand wives saying, well, what are we going to do? It's getting dark and we can't sit here and there's caterpillars here and, you know, make the kids stop eating this. And, you know, you can imagine trying to get 5,000 guys with wives and kids sat down on the grass nice and quiet. But the Lord gets them all sat down at this point in time. He knows what he's going to do. And he takes the loaves and the fishes, it says. When he gave thanks, he distributed to his disciples and the disciples to them that were set down, and likewise of the fishes as much as they would. And it says they were all filled. Literally, they were glutted. So he fed everybody until they couldn't eat anymore. You know how that is. He just didn't give them something. They were all stuffed. So you got to get the picture here now. His disciples don't know what he's going to do. It says he knows what he's going to do. They already told him, because they're looking at the circumstances, all we have is these 5 loaves and 2 fishes. Jesus says, okay, well, then make everybody sit down. You know, make them sit down in order. And he starts to say grace. It says when he gave thanks, in the Greek, it just says he starts to say grace. You know, Lord bless this food before we eat. We're thankful for it. And his disciples must be thinking, what the world is he doing? You know, is he just going to give this to us because we've been so tired? Or is he, maybe he's going to eat it himself and we're just all going to get blessed watching him eat, you know. He figures about 10,000 people down. He's got these little fish that are about this big from the Sea of Galilee, and he's 5 barley loaves, and he's saying grace. And everybody's, you know, the women are saying, are you sure this is the one we're supposed to be following, you know? But then he distributes to his disciples. They go out. So you see these guys heading down into the crowd, you know, coming back up with an empty load and saying, what is going on up there? And I don't know. He won't let us stand around long enough to find out because he wants us to feed the people, you know. And just see him up there breaking and breaking and breaking. And the Greek, you know, gives us the idea that it just as fast as he was breaking it off, it was multiplying, you know. And these guys are coming back, and, you know, people are yelling for seconds, you know, over here, you know, more fish over here, you know, and these guys are running. And then finally it says, now we know it gets towards evening, it says at the end of the day, it says, verse 12, when they were all filled, he says unto his disciples, gather up the fragments that remain, because we don't want to waste anything, that nothing is lost. And therefore they gathered them together and filled 12 baskets. Now these are the little baskets about this big that somebody would have carried their, like a lunch basket. They gathered them together and filled 12 baskets with fragments and 5 barley loaves, which remained over above them that had eaten. So what it says is he sends the guys out, says we don't want to waste anything. They go through this crowd of about 10,000 people. It's getting towards dusk. Jesus is probably sitting at the top of the hill. These guys come back and each one's got one basket. And they kind of all get back and just look at each other. And they've all got one basket for themselves. And I'm sure Jesus is just sitting there kind of smiling at them. And then it was time for them to sit down and eat, of course. So these guys had a nice, quiet, amazing dinner, I'm sure. Each with their own basket, looking in their, you know, hearing all this, you know, 10,000 people, everybody else is so full, they're laying around. And these guys are just eating, and the Lord's just sitting there smiling, thinking to each other, what happened here today? But the people, it says at this point in time, those men, when they had seen the miracles that Jesus did, said, this is of a truth that prophet that should come into the world. And at this point, they decide this is the guy, and they want to make him king. Now, you can jot down Deuteronomy 18:15 is the prophecy they're quoting from. I'll read it so you can understand what they're talking about. Moses had prophesied that there would be one coming like himself. And the people, after seeing this miracle, of course, are thinking of the manna that fell in the wilderness and the fact that Moses, they're mistaking that Moses provided them for 40 years with bread in the wilderness. Jesus, they've just seen this miracle and they said, this of a truth is that prophet. And they're waiting. You know, of course, there had been expectancy. Now, in Deuteronomy 18:15, it says, the Lord thy God will raise up unto thee, God speaking to Moses, a prophet from the midst of thee, of thy brethren, like unto me, Moses is saying, and unto him shall you hearken, according to all that thou desirest of the Lord thy God in Horeb, in the day of the assembly, saying, let me not hear again the voice of my God, neither let me see this great fire anymore, lest I die. And the Lord said unto me, they have well spoken that which they have spoken. And I will raise them up a prophet from among their brethren like unto thee. And I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him. And it came to pass that whosoever, it shall come to pass that whosoever shall not hearken unto my words, which he shall speak in my name, I will require that of him. So what the Lord says to Moses now is, I'm going to raise up a guy in their own midst, and he's going to speak to them, and they're going to need to hearken unto him. He says they've spoken in wisdom, because when they were at Horeb, at Mount Sinai, and this tremendous voice spoke out of the cloud to 2.5 million Jews and spoke the Ten Commandments, and they were afraid. And after God spoke, they came to Moses, and they said, listen, they said, you go and talk to him from now on, because this is too scary. You talk to him, and then come tell us what he's saying, because if he talks to us again, we're all going to die. So God says, I'm going to give them everything they've desired, and I'm going to raise up a prophet among them of their brethren, and I'll let him speak to them, but if they don't hear him, I'm going to require that of them. So we know Jesus makes this plain through the Gospel of John. Anybody who believes on him has everlasting life. Anybody who rejects him is damned. Nobody will be in hell for their sins. People will be in hell because they've rejected Jesus Christ. There will be plenty of people in heaven that were sinners, that were washed in the blood of the Lamb. All men everywhere are sinners. Some sinners turn to Jesus Christ and ask for forgiveness because of the work he's done on the cross. Some sinners don't. Some sinners go to heaven. Some sinners go to hell. And you know what I'm talking about. I'm not giving you a license to the flesh. So God says, I'll put my words in his mouth, he'll speak to the people, and they'll have to hearken to him, and I'll require that of them. I'll say to them one day, when every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess that Jesus is Lord, you had my son, you had it your way, why didn't you listen? So they said, now at this point in time, this is the one. He did a miracle just like Moses. He fed the multitudes. This is the kind of king we want. And it says in verse 15, when Jesus therefore perceived that they would come and take him by force and make him a king, he departed again into a mountain himself alone. And when evening was now come, his disciples went down into the sea. Now it tells us in the other gospels that he sent his disciples away. He constrained them to get into the boat, it says, and leave. This is establishing the whole foundation for the Bread of Life discourse. Jesus knows that they're about to establish his kingship and his authority on a false foundation. Jesus knows that his disciples are much safer in the storm than they are sitting on a sunny hillside, basking in God's blessing and thinking this is the way everything's going to go. Jesus knows what a false foundation it is, and we learn about it quickly as we come to Christ, and then we get into trouble and we say, well, I don't understand. It says that he's going to bless us and we're going to have abundant life and everything's going to go be hunky-dory and everything's going to go good, and here I am and this is coming and that's coming, and what's wrong? Jesus knows they want to establish a relationship with him as the King of Israel because he's feeding them on a material level. And he knows that his disciples are safer alone out in the storm than they are in the midst of that type of attitude and movement. If a man arises today in the world that can solve world hunger, that can feed the people, they're going to make him king in a minute. And that's what's going to happen to the Antichrist. Jesus, in the chapter before this, said, look, I've come in my Father's name and you haven't received me, but another's going to come in his own name and you're going to receive him. Jesus knows, and Satan knows, the effect of this false hope among his disciples. If we start to think everything's going to be okay, we're relating to God so he'll bless us. He's just a means. We're serving him so he can serve us. We're giving to him so he can give to us. We're just doing these things to God so we can get blessed and get all the things that are promised. And if we're relating because of our flesh on a physical level that everything in our relationship with the Lord is going to be fine, we're building on a false foundation, and he knows that. Because then what happens when sickness comes to our family? What happens if the economy starts to fall out? What happens if you get married? You know, all these single gals or single guys saying, oh, I need to find a Christian man, you know. I need to find him. And then when you find him, then you need to find that peace that passes understanding. Life is full of problems. Jesus knows that we're safer in the storm with him, learning to stand, learning where he is, learning how to relate to him in the midst of the problems that are around us, relating to him as the bread of life, as the one that will sustain us, then we are in some false attitude that everything is going to be fine. You see, it's easy for us here in America to develop that. Christians around the world today are being put to death for their faith. They're being persecuted. They're taking their Bibles and tearing them up so everybody can have a page, and they go and memorize it and bring it back and switch pages so you can learn the next page of the Bible, and doing it at the risk of their lives. But they're not lacking anything. They aren't saying, oh, if God really loved me, how come he didn't give me a new car? And how come this ain't happened? How come I didn't get a raise? And this is such a bummer, and God can't be a God of love because I wanted this new pottery for 4 months now and it never works out, and my dog swallowed the handball. And they aren't lacking anything. Jesus is going to say to these people, you didn't seek me because you understood the sign. He says, you didn't see the sign. You sought me because I fed you. They didn't seek Christ. They didn't understand that he was the bread of life come down from heaven. And he talks to them in this whole discourse that he came to give his life so that they could have life. They weren't relating to him as the source of their life and understanding that he came to forgive sins, to give his life. They were relating to him on a temporal level of blessing. Now, I think it's important for us to understand, and those of you who have been with us on Wednesday nights as we've been studying through Ezekiel, You see that Ezekiel was dealing with the nation of Israel, who was God's nation, God's people, and they thought, nothing like this can happen to us. And the predominant movement through the land in that day amongst was false prophets, and the prophecies were prosperity, prosperity, prosperity. God's blessing, God's blessing, God's blessing. And they were selling those prophecies. God was about to judge Israel. Israel thought, this couldn't happen to us. God would never use the Babylonians to judge us because we're his people. They were relating to God on a mere level of physical blessing. And it made way for this movement of these false prophets. Today, in the church, in America, there's a predominant movement. You know, we've been so aware of, well, this is happening in the Mideast with Israel. This is happening in Europe with the 10-nation confederacy. These things are all prophesied. We're watching for the Antichrist to come to power. But one of the very important areas of prophecy is that in the midst of the church, false prophets are going to arise, bringing us into a relationship with God on the basis of blessing. That's why we should relate to God, because he's feeding us. He's good to us. I recommend that you read The Seduction of Christianity. It's a new book that's just come out. He names certain men teaching in the church, predominant today, that base what they're teaching their churches on books by Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. Napoleon Hill confesses in his books that there were spirits that came to him and taught him the secrets of positive mental attitude, of positive thinking, of positive confession, that they belong to a group called the Ascended Masters. This kind of thing is sweeping through the church today. But then what happens when everything is supposed to be positive and hunky-dory and the economy gets sour? What happens when you're arguing with your wife and you realize, well, I'm still selfish, I'm still this, I'm still that? When you look at your thoughts and what's going on in your heart and you see there's still problems. When somebody in your family comes down with cancer, somebody who you love who's a Christian gets into a serious automobile accident, and it doesn't gel. You want to make Jesus in your life king because he's feeding the multitudes, because he's ministering on a material level. And as long as everything's blessed, that's fine. But when things get tough, it's like, where are you? He gets his disciples, because it's the last few months he's training them, right out of that crowd. He puts them in the boat and constrains them to leave. They want to make Jesus king because he's feeding the multitudes. If they had made him king then, he'd have gone to Jerusalem, he'd have been crucified, he'd have been killed. They'd have thought, well, this isn't the plan. What happened? God's not working according to my plan the way I thought he did. And they'd all have been stumbled by it. Jesus knows that his disciples are safer in the midst of the storm, knowing how to relate to him. It says, Jesus, therefore, when he perceived that they would come and take him by force, they made him to make him king, he departed again in the mountain. When evening was come, now his disciples were out at sea, and entered into a ship, and went over the sea towards Capernaum, and it was now dark, and Jesus was come to them. And the sea arose by reason of a great wind. So when they had rowed about, this is about halfway across the lake, about 25 or 30 furlongs, they saw Jesus walking on the sea, drawing nigh unto the ship, and they were afraid. But he said unto them, it is I. Literally, he said unto them, I am. Be not afraid. Same thing Moses heard at the burning bush. I am that I am. He said, I am. Be not afraid. Then they willingly received him into the ship, and immediately the ship was at land whither they went. Matthew tells us at that point they get down and they worshiped him, and they took a hold of his seat and they said, truly thou art the Son of God. Jesus would rather have them out in the storm than sitting on the other side of the lake on a sunny hill all fat and saying, this is a great king. This is the kind of king we want to have. It tells us that he went up into the mountains and he prayed up there, and it was the fourth watch when he went and walked on the water. His disciples had been rowing from sundown till between 3 and 6 in the morning. They're in a storm. The boat's ready to sink. They're laboring to the point of exhaustion. It says that he's watching them. He's aware of what's going on. He's working in their lives. He comes walking them on the sea. He didn't part the sea like Moses. He just walked across it. And he comes to them and they're afraid. Of course, he says, don't be afraid. And it says when he gets into the boat with them, then they're where they wanted to go. They're where they wanted to be. And I find, I don't want to say I've learned this, because if I say I learned it, then next week he's going to make me go through it to find out if I really meant what I said. And I don't want him to do that. But I'm learning that when I'm in the boat with him, I'm where I want to be. I'm learning that life's full of problems and it's immature to think that this is his kingdom, because he said his kingdom is not of this world. There is prosperity. There is blessing. But it's all built on a certain foundation. I find it's not enough to relate to him on a material level. I find there are people that are millionaires that jump out windows when a stock market crashes. I find there are people that are millionaires that murder their wives, that leave home, that have no happiness, that become drunkards. I find the real need in my life is that I have to deal with myself, that I have a relationship with Jesus Christ that my wife can't get into, my kids can't get into, none of you can get into, it's personal. And I find in there, I have to face myself. I have to face my selfishness. I have to face the hypocrisy in my life that I want to get rid of. I have to face the sin in my life that I don't want to deal with. I have to face my old man. I have to face those things. And at that point in time, the only thing that makes it for me is the bread of life. The same thing he said to the woman at the well. I'll give you water, you'll never thirst again. Here he says, I'll give you bread and you'll never be hungry again. Basically, what he's saying is you can take all your dreams, everything you think that's going to make you happy in life, everything you think is important to you, and you can nail up right over it, if you drink of this, you're going to thirst again. That's what he said. There's only one place to go and one level to relate to him on as king, and that is the work he's accomplished for us on the cross. That is that his kingdom is coming. That is that we can go to him in the middle of the storm with our problems, with the things that are wrong. There might be problems at home. There might be problems at work. There might be problems anywhere. And that he loves us the way we are. That he's willing to come to speak to us. That he's willing to sustain us. He said, you didn't come to me because you understood the sign. You didn't understand that I'm going to break myself and distribute myself to the world, that I'm going to give my body. I'm going to give my flesh and my blood, as he says later. He says many of his disciples were offended at that and started to draw back. He said, if you're offended at that, what are you going to do if I ascend up where I came from? If you're offended because I said I'm breaking my body for you, what are you going to do if all of a sudden I float up into heaven and I didn't fulfill my plan the way you think I should? You're going to be more offended then. He said, blessed is whoever is not offended in me and what he's doing. And sometimes we find things aren't going right. I thought this is what you said in your word. I thought you were a God of love. Why does this hurt? Why is this happening? And I find sometimes in my life there's an offense. I get a little offended. Why did my dog swallow a handball now? You know, when I'm trying to save for this. Lord, why did my son dive on a brick today? You know I need to study for the study tonight. You must know how important it is for me to get alone with you and hear from you. Why is there so much insanity today? But Jesus knows we're so much safer in the storm with him than we are with a predominant attitude, and it's coming in the church today. Prosperity, prosperity, prosperity. Blessing, blessing, blessing. Because we're an exclusive group of Christians in America. Most of the Christians in the world facing hardships that I don't know if we're ready to face, but yet they're not lacking anything in their lives. They're finding peace. They're finding that their hope in a kingdom that's coming is not shaken. They're finding it in the hour their persecutor put to death that God gives them the words they should speak. They're finding that His promises are yea and amen. But they haven't been duped. Jesus Himself strictly refused to be set up as king on a basis of temporal blessing. Though that comes, He loves us. But He wants His relationship with us to be that of sustenance, spiritually. And He is the only place we can go to satisfy that need. He's the only place we can go to find forgiveness when we can't find it anywhere else or from anybody else. He's the only place that we can go and find some kind of self-esteem when we don't like ourselves and we don't believe in who we are and we're not being what we think we should be. We can still go to Him and find out we're sons and daughters of the Most High God. And we can find out no matter how tough things get, that when He's in the boat with us, that's really where we want to be. Let's stand.